It's 6 Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific, coast to coast and around the world.
I'm not a doctor, but I have a PhD in recognizing bullshit when I hear it.
From the America Out Loud Talk Radio Studios.
The American people are not feeling very loved right now, though. They're not feeling heard by the Biden administration.
It's time for The Truth Be Told with Booker Scott.
Let the little children come unto me, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's a quote from Jesus in Matthew 19:14 of the Holy Bible. On Sunday, October 8, 2023, Madison Ann Hines, age 3, entered heaven, running into the arms of her Savior. Her love and light were a blessing to all who knew her. And that is from her obituary. It's a solemn way to start this hour. I don't want to say it, and I don't want you to hear it. I don't want you to have to hear it. But Gabriel Artiga was traveling on a highway in Spartanburg, South Carolina on October 8, 2023, without a license for a second time. When his path crossed with Madison's fate, Artiga was charged with reckless homicide for the death of Madison Hines, age 3. Artiga is an illegal immigrant, and I know accidents happen, but that accident should have never happened because Artiga should have never been in this country, and he shouldn't have been driving. Madison would soon be 4 years old, and it's a solemn start to this hour, but Madison's parents are still solemn, and they probably will be forever. Stats don't matter when it comes to illegal immigrants committing crimes, because that number should be zero. Madison should be with us. Lake and Riley should still be in college. And 2-year-old Jeremy Caceres in Maryland should still be here. There doesn't have to be one more, but there will be. And I pray it's no one in your family or in mine. I'm Booker Scott, and this is The Truth Be Told on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Thanks for listening to us and being here. As always, I really appreciate it. This hour is brought to you by Gold Co. Just go to BookerLikesGold.com to find out more about buying precious metals, and that is BookerLikesGold.com. Well, the free-flow immigration that's destroying communities and families like that of Madison Hines, age 3, is just part of Joe Biden's America. The leftist socialists, they want to tell you to drive a Fred Flintstone car that's plugged into your house. They want you to eat fake burgers cooked on a stove that they tell you that you can use. Biden's policies are a debacle, and coming this hour, we'll talk about the first and maybe the biggest debacle of Joe Biden's presidency. It's debatable, that and the border. I don't know which one it is. But that was the withdrawal of American troops from Afghanistan in August of 2021. At least that was the first big thing that the Biden administration did. Up until that point, there was some election integrity issues that was in the news. There was also the fight against COVID in early 21, early in his presidency. But the withdrawal from Afghanistan is where things really started to go downhill. Also, we'll have an interesting conversation. I want you to hear this. Get ready to dig down a rabbit hole. Grab a pencil and a piece of paper for this segment, which is coming up here in just a few minutes with Brianna Sagdahl. It's about Donald Trump's effort to decouple TikTok and ByteDance from China with an executive order that he signed back in 2019. That executive order is not dead. It's still in the works and has been working for 3 years under Joe Biden. And we'll find out more about that. You'll want to hear this conversation. Let's start here with Afghanistan. In the middle of the night, almost, the decision was made to leave Afghanistan. Of course, Donald Trump had made plans to withdraw and had an agreement with the Taliban before he left office. They were planning on withdrawing. And I think we all could agree that we had had enough. 20 years was enough in the Middle East. And if you remember, the Taliban at that time was moving across the country of Afghanistan, and they were moving at a rapid pace. America abandoned the Bagram Air Base. You remember that? That was a terrible decision. They left $85 billion in military equipment, including helicopters, night vision goggles, guns, ammo. They left everything. They also left Americans, and Afghan military translators. And ultimately, the American embassy fell, and helicopters could be seen rescuing Americans from rooftops, just like back in Vietnam in Saigon. The biggest loss was the lives of 13 American soldiers. We remember all of that. Even now, as almost 3 years have passed, General Milley and General McKenzie testified and could speak freely now as American citizens, not military men. There wasn't a lot of new information here, but it's worth a look to put a lid on this story forever.
The more I listen to this hearing, the more infuriated I get. And I know the Gold Star family sitting here have to feel the same way. I know every veteran watching today has to feel the same way, because it's not about us. It's about them.
And really, that's what this hearing is all about. We can't hope for any accountability for anyone in government for the things that we saw in August of 2021 with the withdrawal of Afghanistan. It's not going to happen. We know that. But there can be some closure. The families, these Gold Star families, deserve to have the answers, don't they? This is Congressman Matt Waltz of Florida that is asking the questions. That was him that was just speaking. He's going to continue now with General Milley. Here is Congressman Matt Waltz.
And I think what upsets them most, General Milley, General McKenzie, are some of the statements from the president during this evacuation, including an interview that the president gave on national television during the withdrawal on August 18th, saying, "The generals never advised me to leave 2,500, and the only air base, Bagram Air Base, in the world sandwiched between China, Russia, Iran, and a platform to stay after counterterrorism."
The reference there by Congressman Waltz about 2,500 is leaving 2,500 American military personnel there in the country. If you remember that, back into 2021, that was the conversation. Should they leave 2,500? Now more of Congressman Waltz.
General Milley, is that an accurate statement that the generals never advised him to leave a stay-behind force to keep a lid on half the world's terrorist organizations?
I will tell you what my thoughts were at the time, my assessment.
Well, you've testified today. You both testified repeatedly.
Yes.
That you advised the National Command Authority we should leave a stay-behind force, including the base.
Plus NATO, plus...
That's right.
That's correct.
Did President Trump leave that stay-behind force despite his stated desire to get everybody out because the Taliban didn't meet the conditions?
When the administrations changed hands, there were 2,500 soldiers, and that was a
decision. Did you then, and you've stated today you didn't advise Biden to pull everybody out. You advised him to stay.
That's correct.
And we all know that Joe Biden lies about everything. That's what he's done his entire career. But here we have Joe Biden lying to the American people during this debacle that he had no military advice to leave 2,500 troops there. Now we know that that is a lie. We knew it then, but now we have confirmation of that in sworn testimony in this hearing. Let's go back to Matt Waltz. He's going to go through a list of all the things that Joe Biden did and lied about right here.
But let's go down the list here. Let's go back to July of 2021. President Biden, the likelihood there's going to be the Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely. Does that comport with your knowledge at the time? In fact, you just a few weeks later said Kabul be surrounded in 60 days.
My assessment at the time was if we went to zero in U.S. military forces, then there was a high likelihood of a collapse of the government of Afghanistan and the ANSF with the Taliban taking over.
Collapse.
But I thought it was going to be, I personally thought it was going to be in the fall, somewhere around Thanksgiving. The assessments vary widely.
We're talking within months.
Within months of our withdrawal, that's correct.
The next one, there's going to be no circumstance where you see people being lifted off the roof of an embassy of the United States from Afghanistan. It's not at all comparable with Saigon. I think this picture proves that not to be the case. Fair enough. Joe Biden, July 8th, 2021. Next one, Americans should understand we're going to try to get it all done before August 31st. And if you're an American, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay to get them all out. Was that your understanding of the operational planning at the time? to stay beyond August 31st, or were you planning to get out by August 31st?
Plan to get out by August 31st.
Last, but perhaps the most egregious. We believe about 100 to 200 Americans remain in Afghanistan with some intention to leave. You both testified today. You just testified, General Milley, that it was impossible to know the number. In fact, is that accurate? It was very difficult to know the number.
Very difficult, and I don't think the numbers were accurate.
Yet the State Department's revised that number since to nearly 1,000 Americans left behind.
I remember that like it was yesterday. Joe Biden saying, no, they're just a couple of hundred. And the State Department, Anthony Blinken, was saying the same thing. We all knew there were thousands. We could see that. There were news reports of that. Why would their government continue to lie to us? They lie to us about everything because they think you and me, they think we're stupid. That's what it's about. Matt Waltz continues questioning here with General McKenzie. General McKenzie testified that he had a plan and put in place to stay there and protect Americans. Here is Matt Waltz. This is the last one from Congressman Waltz.
In July of 2021, Bagram is closing. We're withdrawing our four-star commander, General Milley. Ghani is visiting President Biden, practically begging us to at least leave our contractors and some little bit of air support. General McKenzie, you've testified that you were so concerned in July of 2021 that you put up recommendations, including lily pads to get our allies out, putting pieces in place to process our SIVs faster, putting measures in place to get our American citizens out, to get our allies out, and to take care of what American military should do, which is protecting all Americans. You were so concerned in July of 2021, you put those recommendations forward. That's what you've testified today.
That's correct.
And in fact, also, the diplomats on the ground, Mr. Chairman, sent a dissent cable. 23 diplomats saying, if you continue down this road, disaster will ensue. Was that dissent cable shared with either of you? This is a formal channel going to the Secretary of State himself. Was that shared with you as the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs? Was that shared with you as the Commander?
I've never seen it.
I didn't see it at the time, and I haven't seen it since, and I would like to see that dissent
cable. I think the American people would like to see that. Chairman, here's my question for you. Do you know where the Secretary of State was on August 13th? The day before Kabul fell, do you know where the Secretary of State was? Despite all of your concerns, State Department wasn't planning fast enough. We weren't getting our people out. According to the Washington Post, he was in the Hamptons. He was in the Hamptons on vacation. Secretary of State Blinken. I don't know. I can't even imagine how that makes our Gold Star families feel.
I don't think anybody's really surprised that Anthony Blinken was on vacation as Kabul fell. Are you? I'm not. I think I remember him being on vacation during that time. There were a lot of social media posts about it. There were news reports about it. But I really wonder how that makes these Gold Star families feel that are sitting here in this hearing. There's quite a few of them there, of those 13 soldiers that were killed in Afghanistan as America withdrew. They're sitting there listening to this. I wonder if they have any satisfaction at all with the answers that they are getting from these generals with regard to the communication between Joe Biden's White House and them. I doubt it. And now let's move on to the embassy. Eventually, the embassy was evacuated. It had to be done in an emergency situation, or there could have been another Benghazi. Here is House Foreign Affairs Chairman Michael McCaul. He is leading this hearing with questions for General McKenzie.
And did the State Department, specifically Embassy Kabul, have an evacuation plan for Afghanistan?
So, Chairman, every embassy has an evacuation plan for Afghanistan. And Embassy Kabul had a plan, had what we would call an F-77 list, which is the list of U.S. Citizens and their families that are in the country. And we struggled to gain access to that plan and work with them over the months of July until we finally got a decision to execute the NEO, which, as I've already mentioned, occurred on the 14th of August. Now, we worked with the embassy before then, but we didn't have authority to move out and do the things that you have to do to make a NEO happen until the 14th of July, or correction, the 14th of August. And as I noted, we were in extremis at that point.
I don't know about you, but I'm getting the feeling that the generals and our military were trying to alert the White House and the State Department that they needed to get ready for this. And they were not getting the direction back that they needed to make the plans so that the debacle wouldn't happen. Whose fault is that? Who is the leader of the free world? The president of the United States is Joe Biden. Anthony Blinken of the State Department, but he was too busy because he was on vacation in the Hamptons. Here is more of Leader McCaul.
And August 14th, just days before the fall of Kabul and the evacuation of the embassy, August 14th is when they finally put forward this plan.
Now, that's when we got authority to execute the plan.
That's when you got authority. And you urged the White House and State Department to put pen to paper to develop a plan to get Americans and our Afghan allies out of Afghanistan, correct?
Yes, I did. In fact, I was concerned by the middle of July. I was concerned about the different pace of Department of Defense planning as compared to Department of State planning. And I took an opportunity then to make representations to the secretary about my concern over that, the fact that we were moving pretty fast on this. They were not moving fast, and I was concerned that we were going to arrive at different locations just based on it.
And now we know they certainly arrived at two different places at the same time. General Milley backed up what General McKenzie just said there. General McKenzie mentioned there that he had given it to the secretary. Of course, that was General Milley, and Milley confirmed that he had that information and that he had made recommendations as well. Now, let's move on to Congressman Mike Lawler. He is a freshman congressman from the state of New York. He had a big win in the midterm of 22, and he's going to get into some questioning about the final withdrawal. If you don't remember, that was September 11th, 2021. That was when everybody was going to be out. That is 20 years exactly back to 9/11. So was there a reason for withdrawal on September 11th? That's what Congressman Mike Lawler gets into.
With respect to the decision by President Biden to announce September 11th as the deadline for full U.S. military withdrawal, was there any tactical or military reason for that date?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So was it purely political and from the standpoint of a symbolic date from your understanding?
I'll be candid. I don't even know where or who made the decision of the 11 September thing. I frankly thought it was actually inappropriate at the moment in time, but it was very rapidly changed to the end of August.
And you were never involved in the decision to do that?
Not to pick the date, no.
Okay. General McKenzie, you stated in your opening statement that you and you alone are responsible for the military operations that occurred during the withdrawal. Again, I ask, did you set the date for the withdrawal?
No, I did not.
Did you make the decision to bring our troop level to zero?
I did not.
President Biden is the commander-in-chief. Did he make those decisions?
Yes, he did.
So is it your position that he bears no responsibility for the aftermath, that you are the only one that bears the responsibility for the military operations?
So I was responsible for military operations. The commander-in-chief is responsible for those and all the other operations, to include those of the Department of State, all the other appropriate cabinet agencies. But
you report to the commander-in-chief?
I do.
Okay, so at the end of the day, is he responsible for the decision to set the date and to set the troop level to zero?
Yes.
So he bears responsibility, not just you?
That's correct.
I don't know about you, but I did learn a couple of things from those hearings. And it was good to hear from the generals and what was going on from the inside during all of that mess. That was another Joe Biden debacle. And that was the first one. That was the withdrawal from Afghanistan. If you listen to the show a lot, you know how I feel about our government and our financial system. It's no secret. I'm a big believer in diversifying your money with precious metals like gold and silver. But when it comes to buying precious metals, you need the right company in your corner. And that's why I've partnered with the top-rated precious metals company, Goldco, because reputation really matters. Goldco is a six-time Inc. 5000 winner, 2022 Company of the Year, and they've helped people like you and me place over $2 billion in gold and silver. And right now, they're offering my listeners up to $10,000 in bonus silver when opening a qualified IRA account. This is your opportunity to protect yourself from our out-of-control, corrupt government. So don't pass it up. Grab your phone, your keyboard, whatever it takes to get the job done and take action right now. Go visit BookerLikesGold.com. I want you to grab a pen, a pencil, a piece of paper, whatever you need to take notes and go down this rabbit hole with us here in just a minute. Brianna Sagdahl is going to join us, and she's going to share some information she's come across about the administrative state in America, what they have been doing behind closed doors in the back rooms about TikTok and ByteDance.
More Truth Be Told with Booker Scott in minutes on America Out Loud.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, HealthyCell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And HealthyCell's not a pill. It's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop. That's AmericaOutLoud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Tonight at 7 o'clock, it is Unleash the Political News Hour, followed by the National Security Hour. And then at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, it is After Dark with Robin Andrew. My name is Booker Scott. This is The Truth Be Told. And you know, TikTok and the ban on TikTok has been in the news with the legislation that passed in the House and now going over to the Senate. A lot of controversy over that, exactly what it does, what it's supposed to do. And then we see all of these people lining up to buy TikTok. But if you remember, Donald Trump did something about banning TikTok too, all the way back in 2019. We're going to have a conversation about that right now. We're going to get knee deep into some weeds in this conversation. I want to welcome Brianna Sagdahl. She is a writer and a research fellow. A senior writer or a senior research fellow. I'm not sure which one, but Brianna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on with you.
And which one did I get wrong there? Is it senior writer or senior research fellow?
It's both. I'm a senior writer and research fellow.
Okay. And you probably don't want to be senior on either one of them, actually. So, you know, I talked about there about Donald Trump's initiative or attempt to ban or separate from China, from TikTok. And he started that process in 2019. We see where we are now today. But you have come across some information that I think people need to hear about. So take us from 2019 to where we are now.
Well, certainly. Thank you. In 2019, Donald Trump had signed a national emergency authorization for what's called IEPA. That is the International Economic Emergency Powers Act. And he, through that act, worked to secure the bulk data and cyberstructure infrastructure, essentially, of American citizens' data. And the target in that economic sanctions authorization was TikTok and its parent company, ByteDance. While initially what happened is the Treasury and the Department of Commerce worked to facilitate sanctions against the company. The company then sued the Trump administration and fought back on one really important and distinct point, which they challenged the president's authority to force divestiture or compelled sales of shares. And they challenged that on both a statutory basis and an administrative guideline basis, and they won in court. And so after that process was initiated, Trump left office, Biden took office, and the day before Biden took office, the CFIUS is the name of the administrative agency, promulgated a new set of final rule changes that were initiated from Trump's executive order or invocation of IEPA. And over the course of the last 3 years, ByteDance and TikTok have worked with the Biden administration to come into compliance. So if you have any questions, I'll stop there for a moment.
I want to back up real quick to Trump signs an executive order. But then within his administration, then he is getting pushback on this from the beginning. And they actually take him to court and they win. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's correct. And interestingly enough, the company sued that the Trump administration was violating their constitutional rights, and they won in court.
You can't make this stuff up, people. This is how crazy our government is. So Trump signs the executive order. He's trying to protect the American people, their data. He's trying to separate China and ByteDance and TikTok. All of that was going on. And within our own government, people that work for us as civil servants or public servants, they are fighting against Donald Trump. And some people would call that the deep state. Maybe they're highly qualified experts that the government is full of. But that's what happened. And then coming into office in January of 2021 is Joe Biden. And within hours of him taking office, they come to some agreement. That's what I'm hearing from you.
Well, essentially what happened is the agency that is responsible for administrating sanctions, if you will. And this is CFIUS. It's CFIUS. Essentially, this agency promulgated new rule changes, and it was based on Trump's executive order. But in really, it was in many ways in a response to the lawsuit and the legal challenges that were brought up against the Trump administration in the course of these actions. But what it did is it basically expanded the definitions and expanded much authority. But you're right in the sense that our entire legal apparatus, if you will, was not only shocked and surprised, but more or less outraged by this action from the Trump administration. And you had everyone from Brennan Center to Duke Law, the ACLU, writing full reports on the use of IEPA and economic sanctions in order to compel divestiture or steer the market in any which way, right? Essentially, this sort of centralization of digital transactions and centralization of power to the president of the United States. And it was challenged almost at every level. And so here we are 3 years later, and it was right in the middle of January that CFIUS ended up publishing their final rule change, and they made some differentiations from the interim final rule, which was very broad, very sweeping. But still, the final rule change just drastically broadened the scope of authority for this administrative agency. And really, what it applies to is everything that connects to, it says, telephone, internet, satellite. I mean, when you think of digital infrastructure, it is absolutely everything that applies now to this agency. And so you have to understand what takes place after economic sanctions are invoked. And it goes through several different administrative agencies. One of them is the Office of Foreign Asset Control. That goes through the Treasury Department, and they handle individuals or people, covered entities or persons of concern. And they are the ones who more or less adjudicate the individual side. And then there's CFIUS, which is the commerce side for, I think it's, I'm going to forget the acronym, of course.
Do they report to Commerce, or are they reporting to the State Department?
Well, this is an administrative agency through the Department of Commerce, okay. And they report directly to the president. And so CFIUS essentially adjudicates all actions that need to be taken by the corporation in order to come into compliance and not end up with the result or, you know, whatever the sort of enforcement provision is that they're being threatened with. And so whatever the company is would end up working with this administrative agency. So you have to kind of understand how it breaks down. Like, for example, on the domestic side, most Americans recognize if they are alleged of wrongdoing, right, then their district attorney would handle the case. Then they would be appointed, you know, so there's like a process for everything that happens.
And we know what that process should look like. In that case. And you mentioned a few minutes ago that they expanded it. What does this do for the person listening to this right now? Why should they be concerned about this? And then I'll let you get back to the weeds.
So that's a really great question. And I think this really is the weeds and the nuts and bolts at the same time, if you will. So everyone is pointing towards HR 7521. This is the quote unquote TikTok ban bill. And most people are saying the bill very clearly outlines countries of concern, foreign adversarial nations, if you will. And so they're saying that there's some, you know, some reason to be relieved or take a deep breath or whatever, because it's, you know, the bill limits country of concern to four different nations, which are North Korea, China, Russia, and Iran. Right. So what I'm talking about in terms of expanded definitions, not only the National Emergency Authorization of IEPA, but then also CFIUS through its final rule changes have expanded the authority of both the Attorney General and, of course, their own authority to essentially add or remove a foreign adversarial nation, quote unquote, without notice. And they do this on a fairly regular basis. So if you go online and you look at, for example, the Office of Foreign Asset Control, that's OFAC, and you take a look at all of their rule changes that have just happened over the last 2 weeks, it's almost every day now, they are consistently adding and removing individuals, entities. There's the farm in Gaza, for example, in the West Bank. They just declared economic sanctions on. I mean, these determinations are being made almost daily. So you're talking about a very quickly moving apparatus, and that target can really move at any point in time. And so I really don't think that there is any reason to take comfort in the fact that this bill says that there are only four nations that apply, because we simply know that's not true. Based on both history and the both agencies that actually adjudicate these issues.
Are both agencies aware of each other and what their role is within this?
Well, sure. I mean, they work quite closely together, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, I find it quite fascinating at this point in time because, so CRC is the Congressional Review Council, and essentially they operate like most states' legislative review council would, only these are hired attorneys who work for Congress, and their entire job is to go through administrative rule changes and then make an analysis, or what's called a sidebar, based on past legal challenges, current rule changes, and what the bill will mean in the context of today's administrative frameworks. I am really shocked that not a single member of Congress has asked for a sidebar on this bill specifically, and why we don't have any type of formal analysis that really outlines what this bill will truly mean going forward into the future. And what's also very fascinating to me is, like I said before, you know, ByteDance and TikTok have been working with the Biden administration for the last 3 years. So why suddenly has the quote unquote wool been or rug been pulled out from underneath them? Did they not come into compliance? Because I think that's news to both the company, from what I understand, right? They were shocked that this bill came out. And I think most of the American public is shocked. It just happened so very quickly.
Why do you think that is? Do you have any gut feeling on why it has happened so fast?
Well, I don't know. I don't like to, you speculate. Know, dive into yeah, speculation.
Yeah, yeah that's
but
my
what
job.
I can tell you, what I can tell you for sure is that 2 days into this bill making its way through the House, and for anyone who's not aware, the House actually suspended its own rules in order to pass this bill. That's why it passed so quickly. In my lifetime, I don't remember Congress ever passing a bill this quickly. I mean, it was like 4 days from the time it was introduced to the time that it was passed at the House. That's unheard of. But about 2 days into that process, the Democratic Committee on Oversight, Jamie Raskin, and there's another representative.
Probably Dan Goldman. It seems like
Dan Goldman. Yes, that's it. You're right. They put out a press release and called on James Comer to appear before their committee and to explain to them why Elon Musk had not been brought up on sanctions charges and to look into allegations of sanctions violations, because it appeared to them, because of some report they had received, that Musk had violated sanctions law by allowing blue check marks to members of Hezbollah and Russian oligarchy, apparently. And so what's really interesting, going back to economic sanctions and IEPA, is the fact that, and this is part of the Brennan Center report that came out in 2021, and I can read it to you if you'd like, but to summarize it,
please. Summarize. I mean, if it's from the Brennan Center, please summarize it in two sentences.
Well, sure. So they essentially outline just how easy it is to bring about economic sanctions, and what they say on no uncertain terms is that all you need is an allegation, hearsay, or even a news article from like the New York Times, for example, and an investigation can begin. And they also outline that historically, when investigations begin, the Department of Commerce, Treasury, the State Department, they can impose essentially what's akin to civil asset forfeiture. So they can freeze assets, and they can you know, take property, they can freeze everything prior to a finding of guilt. And so it becomes very difficult, and they say specifically for U.S. citizens to fight back, because they don't have, you know, what they need in order to hire or retain an attorney, for example. So it can be very difficult to fight back.
Is this how they go after Elon Musk?
Well, I would certainly say at this point in time, it appears that there is certainly a committee in the House who has that in mind. Yeah. From their press release.
So tie all this together for us. You mentioned the four countries that can be removed. Why is that important? What happens to that? What happens to that bill if the bill is supposed to be about adversarial countries, but then someone can come along and take those four countries out? What is the bill about then?
Sure. So really what the bill is about is giving the president the ability to force what's called divestiture. And that is the authority to force the sale of private property. And, you know, most people think of property in terms of real property, which is like real estate, for example. IEPA has been used in the past to force the sale of real estate and actual tangible assets. But in this context, it's giving, and it doesn't really specify, it just says divestiture.
Right.
So that could mean that the president has the authority to force the sale of shares. It could mean that the president has the authority to force the sale of real property because it's not further defined.
And if you take all the countries out of it, who does he have the authority to do that to? Americans?
Well, so that's interesting that you bring that up because, again, going back to this Brennan Center report, you know, there's nothing really in IEPA that specifies the act can't be used against U.S. citizens. You know, it's known, like FISA was known,
sure,
that it's to be used against foreign adversaries.
Allegedly only.
Enemy combatants, yeah, right? However, as we saw, that continued to be codified to where suddenly it was used and weaponized against U.S. citizens. So there is this slippery slope argument to be made here that it could potentially be used for citizens of the United States. But I think really when it comes down to it, you know, the president and all applicable agencies, they can add or remove those designations without prior notice. And so I think what that means is Russia's already on there, for example. A really good case could be made that President Trump has ties to Russia,
yeah,
and, or, you know, so forth and so on. So I don't think that the country of concern is necessarily the biggest issue here. I think the language in the bill that's of larger concern is the portion where it says controlled, in individual that is controlled or owned by a foreign adversarial nation. Well, what does it mean to be controlled by,
yeah,
and who makes that determination?
Exactly.
And that's why I think it's so important to go back to the administrative agencies that do make that determination, and that would be CFIUS, and that would be the Office of Foreign Asset Control.
Well, if they wouldn't use so many initials in every government office, it wouldn't be so difficult to remember them all. You're listening to Brianna Sagdahl. She is a writer and research fellow, the Beef Initiative, and thank you for coming in and sharing this. I think it needs to be on people's radar, and I think this is the best explanation that I've had of what is really going on. And after this 20 minutes, I still don't know what's going on. And I'm just joking about that. You've done a great job in explaining it, but we don't know what's going on in this country, is my point. And what they really plan to do with this and what it could be used for. And that's the scary part, isn't it?
I think at this point, everybody should be holding on to their pocketbooks when it comes to centralized control of private property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on.
More Truth in Minutes on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
When God, through His grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutLoud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. liberty and justice for all.
This is The Truth Be Told on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I am Booker Scott. Thanks for joining us here tonight. And I wonder what happened to the Mayorkas impeachment. It's gone to the Senate and it's gone quiet. I mentioned that last month that is probably what's going to happen. Nothing is going to happen with Mayorkas. He's going to keep his job. There will be no accountability there for what's going on at the border from the head of the DHS. Also, Joe Biden's impeachment inquiry continues in the House of Representatives. And do you believe anything is really going to happen out of this? I don't. I don't even know if American people are really paying attention. But if they're not, they really missed a show on Wednesday. I'm sure you probably heard some of it and seen some of it. I have to do some of this because Tony Bobulinski was there to testify and go back into history. He was the one that did the Tucker Carlson interview. And if you remember, he is actually a Joe Biden supporter, Democrat, a voter for Joe Biden. He was also trying to be a business partner with the Biden crime syndicate family. And again, the Biden crime family has about 20 different shell companies. They have millions and millions of dollars that have come into these shell companies. And then that money has been distributed to about 9 different family members. We know all of that information. That has been revealed. So what is the crime? That's what the Democrats are going to keep asking in this hearing. They have to do something. In fact, they also make it about Donald Trump, which was strange. Donald Trump has his hands full. He's in a court every other day. So this is not about Donald Trump, but the Democrats always try to make it about Donald Trump. This was really about Joe Biden and his lies. And there was some classic testimony. I want to get to some of it. Let's start with Tony Bobulinski.
Rep. Dan Goldman and Jamie Raskin, both lawyers, and Mr. Goldman, a former prosecutor with the SDNY from New York, will continue to lie today in this hearing and then go straight to the media to tell more lies.
And that's what the Democrats do every time there is a hearing. And Tony Bobulinski here is talking about Congressman Dan Goldman of New York and Jamie Raskin, two of the worst liars in Congress. And he calls them a liar right here to their face. And Jamie Raskin wants to interrupt. What about the rules? What about the rules, Chairman Comer? He asks. Here's more Bobulinski.
Hunter Biden's defense attorney, Abby Lowell, weaponizes letters to Congress to try to smear my name.
Mr. Chairman.
The cold, hard facts.
And here comes,
Chairman,
in
here
an
comes
attempt
Raskin.
To save his powerfully connected client Wait. And his father. I challenge Mr. Lowell to make those claims on national television so he can be held accountable for his lies.
And then Bobulinski talks about his history and being in the Navy, and his father was in the Navy, his grandfather was in the Navy. He is an American patriot. He doesn't want to be doing this and be caught in the middle of it, but he has been such a patriot over the last 5 or 6 years with this, and he continues to be in this hearing. We'll get to more of him in a few minutes, but Jamie Raskin asked Comer there, when he interrupted Bobulinski again, about the rules in the committee. Can he call us a liar? And Comer looked at the rules and turned behind him and asked the question, and there is nothing in the rules about any witnesses testifying that someone on the panel is a liar. So he got away with it, was allowed to continue to call them a liar. Now, Hunter Biden, if you remember back, he was given a subpoena. He wanted to testify in public. He showed up in public hearings when he wasn't going to testify. He made a big scene out of that. And then when Marjorie Taylor Greene began speaking, and this was a month ago or maybe 2 months ago, he got up and left. He and his attorneys left in the middle of it, causing a big scene. And Hunter Biden says that he wants to testify in public. There was a place for him at the table today, but he didn't show up. And this may have been the funniest thing of this hearing. This is Tony Bobulinski, and listen to him talk to Jamie Comer on this. Comer is a Republican from Kentucky, so here is Bobulinski again.
Should I allow Hunter to give his opening statement first?
Well, doesn't appear Mr. Biden showed up for his public hearing, so we'll recognize you, Mr. Bobulinski.
So he offered the microphone and the time for Hunter Biden to testify, but Hunter Biden is a no-show. He's not there. There were some serious questions, though. It wasn't all fun and games. Nancy Mace had a great line of questioning, and this was to Bob Alinsky and also another Biden partner. And let's listen to Nancy Mace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On March 1st, 2024, Joe Biden stated he did not interact with Hunter or Jim Biden business associates. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask unanimous consent to enter into a record New York Post article. Biden insists he did not interact with his
business. Without objection to order.
We're going to go fast here. I have strictly yes or no questions. On that note, the New York Post article, Joe Biden also said, read the record of every single witness. So I did. I first read Devin Archer's deposition, and he interacted with Joe Biden. Then I read the transcripts of Wob Walker, Eric Schwerin, George Burgess, Kevin Morris, Tony Bobulinski, and Jason Galanis. And every single one of them interacted with Joe Biden.
So there's Nancy Mace telling everybody that Joe Biden is a liar. And again, it's not news. We all know that. That's what he does. And he has done it for a very long time. Go back to 1973, probably, when he started his career as in the Congress. That's how long Joe Biden has been lying to the American people. And he's the president of the United States. This is an impeachment inquiry. And Nancy Mace had questions at the end of this that I think is worth a listen to. Here she is.
Did you ever meet with Devin Archer where Hunter took calls from his father?
Yes.
Okay, during one of these phone calls, and Hunter Biden tell Joe Biden that he and Henry Zhao needed help getting, quote, getting across the finish line?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, Mr. Bobulinski, do you recall receiving an email that floated the possibility of giving 10% ownership of Sinohawk to Joe Biden through Hunter Biden?
Yes.
Okay, my last questions are for both of you very quickly. Mr. Bobulinski and Mr. Galanis, you both stated you were told not to use Joe Biden's name in communications, correct, Mr. Bobulinski?
Correct.
Mr. Galanis?
Yes.
Okay, did Joe Biden participate in phone conversations and meetings with Hunter Biden, his business associates, and foreign interests, yes or no? Mr. Bobulinski?
He clearly did.
Mr. Galanis, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. In Hunter Biden's deposition, he said he did not involve his father in his business. Did Hunter Biden lie under oath, yes or no? Mr. Bobulinski?
Yes.
Mr. Galanis?
That's what he said, yes.
Okay. Is Joe Biden lying when he says he did not interact with Hunter Biden, Jim Biden, their business partners, or foreign interests? Yes or no?
Yes.
Mr. Galanis?
Yes.
All right. In a debate on October 22nd, 2020, Joe Biden denied Hunter Biden made money from China. Then Hunter Biden, his business associates, and foreign interests include money from Chinese businesses, business partners, and or interests. Yes or no? Mr. Bobulinski?
I'm sorry, did the Biden family make money?
Did Hunter Biden receive money from Chinese business interests? Yes or no?
Yes, he had economic interests, and yes.
So there is Nancy Mace bringing China into the equation, and we know how cozy that relationship is and how many millions of dollars that the Bidens have received. The Biden UPenn Center, money came from China for the UPenn Biden Center. That's true also. I'm giving you some truth here. Now, this is the truth, what you're hearing. You're hearing sworn testimony under oath of what the Biden crime family has done. And let's listen to one more Nancy Mace, and then we're going to go on to the other side of the aisle, and we're going to hear from AOC.
Did Hunter Biden receive money from Chinese business interests, yes or no?
He had economic interests, and yes.
All right, Joe Biden has repeatedly claimed that he was not involved in Hunter Biden, Jim Biden, or any other Biden family business deals. Today, our witnesses have proved otherwise. Today, we've established Joe Biden lied about interacting with Hunter Biden's business associates. It is my belief Joe Biden is the closer for Hunter Biden, Jim Biden, and their business associates and foreign interests. Good luck to the left proving otherwise.
So Nancy Mace establishes the relationship between China and Joe Biden, and she also challenges the Democrats to prove otherwise. So let's start with AOC from New York. This is going to be good.
Mr. Bobulinski, I heard your opening statement. It's submitted to the record, part of our proceedings. I have a quick question. Simple. Is it your testimony today that you personally witnessed President Joe Biden commit a crime?
I believe the fact that he was sitting with me while I was putting together a business deal.
Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir?
Real quick, by the way, it is a RICO charge in Fulton County that Donald Trump is facing. But AOC doesn't think it's a crime. I'll keep it going.
You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question. No. RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
statute. Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is the crime?
It's a category of crimes that you're then charged
you
under.
You have charges.
A long hundred.
You have charges. Statute. Sir, yeah. Please
you want me to name the exact statute,
sir,
under RICO?
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18
lawyers. All right, sir. I reclaim my time.
Over 18 lawyers.
I reclaim my time.
You guys.
Okay, thank you, sir. I reclaim my time. Clearly, what we are seeing here today is a continuation of the 15-month saga of the Republican majority lost in the desert. Impeachment 101. The majority party or whomever is raising impeachment must accuse the president of a high crime, a specific high crime or misdemeanor.
That wasn't the case when Donald Trump was impeached. I'll just throw that out for you. You know that. AOC is crazy. The Democrats are crazy. Dan Goldman, Jamie Raskin. Where does this go? I don't have any expectation. This is not going to end up in an impeachment. And, you know, something that AOC said there that is worth listening to, she mentioned 15 months. We're 15 months into the Republicans having control of the House of Representatives. And they haven't done anything with it. And it's disheartening, isn't it? It really bothers me, the fact that we worked so hard to get control of the House of Representatives in the 22 midterms. It's a narrow margin. Your expectations have to be tempered some. But I would have thought the Republicans would have done more. And at this point, whether it's Mayorkas or it's Joe Biden's impeachment inquiry, really it's political theater. That's what it is. That's what it boils down to. That's what we're seeing as we come into a political year here in 2024 and a very important election coming up in November. So the Republicans are trying to use this to get votes. And as a conservative, I look at the last 15 months and I'm wondering why exactly should they have power again when they have accomplished nothing but adding $3 trillion to the debt. But also, I can see what's happening in this country. We're fighting a battle against the socialists, the leftists. These liberals on the left, they want a whole different style of America. It's not the America that I dream of and I hope for. It's not the America that I want my children and my grandchildren and their children to be raised in and to live in. I want the America of hopes and dreams. That's what I hope for. That's what the mission is here at America Out Loud Talk Radio and AmericaOutloud.news. Thank you so much for being the best part of this mission. We really do appreciate it. I started this hour with a verse and a quote from Jesus out of the Bible. I always end my show the same way. And I say that you are the salt of the earth. And salt without flavor, it has no value. And you were told 2,000 years ago that you are the salt of the earth. So keep being salty. Have a great night.
There is only one truth. You've been listening to The Truth Be Told with Booker Scott on America Out Loud.